Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, October 13th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Disability providers may close due to Idaho Medicaid cuts. Librarian and child book author talk about book bans in Idaho and divorcing from the Kootenai County Library District. And we'll hear from Whitman County Commission candidates Chad Wetzel and Cody Finch. All that coming up on the KRFP Evening Report and more. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho disability care providers are saying new Medicaid cuts may force them to close in a state that already has a shortage of direct care workers. The Idaho Health Department announced Medicaid reimbursement cuts of 4% in August. They will take effect when the federal government grants the state permission to make them, at which time the state can claw back the funds. Health and Welfare Department spokesperson Greg Stahl told the Idaho Capital Sun the agency is asking the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to let them exempt personal care services and certified family homes from the cuts. Stahl wrote in an email, "The requests held harmless personal care services and certified family homes that rate adjustments following the required access analysis and public comment. The department will post an information release for providers in the coming weeks with more details." Idaho Association of Home Care Agency President Lindsay Hendricks said exempting disability care providers from the cuts does not solve financial issues. Hendricks said, "We're still so far behind on where we should be with reimbursement rates." Idaho Council on Developmental Disabilities Executive Director Christine Pisani said, "We are well on our way to having a complete void of service providers as a result of not addressing the direct care workforce crisis in home and community-based services. So who's really going to get hit hard are our seniors, people with disabilities, and families. And our rural areas have already been left behind, so anything they do have, I think, is going to be lost." Catholic Diocese of Spokane Bishop Thomas Daly has removed a priest from his South Hill ministry over accusations of using parish funds to pay for sexual activities with vulnerable women, stalking a woman at least once, and using his power as a priest to harm them. The Diocesan Review Board, which the spokesman review reports is made up mostly of people who are not diocese employees, decided after interviews with two of the women by the Victim Assistance Ministry Office and a separate investigation by a retired police detective that the accusations against Reverend Miguel Mejia were credible. The spokesman review reports many of Mejia's former parishioners at the Our Lady of Fatima Church at Perry Street and 34th Avenue continue to support Mejia and are questioning the evidence against him. A comment from a Diocesan Review Board member was, "These women have our sincere respect and our gratitude for this chance to do justice for them and for the chance to protect others from probable harm in the future." Another review board member said, "The first injury that the victim suffered is that a man they respected, that they trusted, that they went to when they were vulnerable, damaged their ability to trust their own experience. Grooming is a gradual erosion of one's ability to perceive the truth, to perceive reality. So over time, these women lost their ability to trust their own experience." The alleged victims were both members of Mejia's parish and not. One supporter of Mejia is the Our Lady of Fatima bookkeeper, Heather O'Keefe, who said, according to the spokesman review, "Father never hid any expense. He was totally transparent. If he was committing this big fraud and using church money for illicit purposes, why would he have submitted the underlying receipts?" You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. More in a moment.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You can listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Listen, listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio.
You've got it right.
Community radio.
Listen, you give a little listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow.
Fight Back Radio. 90.3 on your radio dial. Fight Back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight Back.
We're still here.
Radio. Fight Back.
Many across the country are celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day today, including in Idaho. The occasion has officially replaced Columbus Day in many cities and states. Governor Brad Little signed a proclamation in 2019, recognizing the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. This year, Idaho State University is holding its seventh annual celebration of the holiday. Effie Hernandez is a Shoshone-Bannock tribal citizen and the Native American Student Services Coordinator at ISU. She describes this year's theme.
This year is Indigenous Joy, celebrating strength and resilience. So this particular event offers a meaningful opportunity to honor the rich cultures and histories and enduring contributions of Indigenous peoples.
The event is free and open to the public. Hernandez notes that there's been a push in the state and across the nation against diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, that has not impacted Idaho State University's celebration of Indigenous peoples. Hernandez says the celebration is opportunity for people to connect with the local Indigenous community.
We were really wanting to make sure that we let people know that we're still here, we're resilient, and our strength comes in numbers, and that we're wanting to share that education, we're wanting to share the research that we're doing as people.
Hernandez says they have events planned throughout the day.
We have everything from celebration of strength and resilience through generations, through our keynote speaker, to learning about Indian relay, to learning about medicine. So it's really going towards the resilience and strength piece, because those are components that we really value and we want to continue those traditions.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
As the federal government shutdown continues with expanded ACA tax credits at the center of lawmakers' debate, a new poll finds more than three quarters of the public say they want Congress to extend the subsidies set to expire at the end of this year. More than 800,000 Washington residents rely on ACA health coverage. Ashley Kerzinger with KFF, a nonpartisan health policy research, polling, and news organization that conducted the survey, says with open enrollment right around the corner, many people remain unaware the tax credits have an expiration date.
And when we ask people who purchase this type of coverage, what would you do if your premiums nearly doubled? 4 in 10 said that they would go without health coverage.
Losing that extra help would increase premiums by an average of more than 100%, from around $800 in 2025 to $1,900 in 2026. Around 24 million Americans had Affordable Care Act marketplace health coverage as of April 2025, a record high for the fourth year in a row, according to federal data. Kerzinger adds that people without benefits from an employer or federal programs like Medicaid or Medicare are struggling the most to afford health care.
This is something that has bipartisan support. Majorities of Democrats, Independents, and Republicans all want to see the federal government extend these subsidies for people who buy their own coverage.
According to the poll, more than 8 in 10 people say they would be concerned about the expiration of the tax credits if they heard that health insurance would become unaffordable for many people who buy their own coverage. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
The Latah County Library District hosted a showing of the documentary The Librarians at the Kenworthy Friday night, preceded by a panel discussion on the importance of libraries, the many roles of libraries in communities, and the negative effects of book bans and censorship on libraries. The American Library Association has been tracking the number of banned books every year. Aya Sumner of Moscow is the author of Crocodile Hungry and The Good Little Mermaid Guide to Bedtime, the Idaho chapter lead of Authors Against Book Bans and co-host of the Moscow Banned Book Club. Sumner spoke about how the American Library Association is tracking the increasing number of banned books around the country.
You can look, the ALA has been tracking the number of banned books every year. So they do that every year. And up through 2000, it's normally around 200 or 300 titles that get challenged every year. And then starting in 2021, it jumped up to 4,000 or 3,000. And then it got as high as over 9,000. So for the past 4 years, we went from an average of 200 or 300. And those are usually parents being this book isn't right for my family. I'm not sure if I want my kid reading this. And those are really individual conversations. But what's been happening for the past 5 years is a well-organized, well-funded, targeted attack on the freedom to read and for children to access books and information. And the books that are being targeted the most are books about people of color, written by people of color. They're books by LGBTQ people, written by LGBTQ authors. It is a very targeted attack trying to limit what is available on the shelves, limit the scope of humanity to just what is not realistic. And kids experience that world. How do you tell a child who has a family with parents who are part of the LGBTQ community that a book that represents their family shouldn't be on the shelf? I feel like as a children's author, you always try and think of the child first. And so with all of the censorship and attack, and especially with it coming so much from the children's book community, we're here for the kids, and the kids deserve to have access to information. They deserve to know that there is joy and that there is so much wonderful things in the world and all kinds of history.
That was local resident and children's book author Aya Sumner. West Bonner Library District Director Megan Mize described how the rest of the rural libraries, including the Coeur d'Alene Library District, divorced from the Kootenai County Library District, which has elected pro-censorship library boards.
They decided back in January that they were going to effectively take away parents' rights to choose. In February, they called the rest of the consortium idiots and scoundrels, and they were smart enough to put that in their board minutes, so you can go look for that yourself. We had t-shirts made, idiots and scoundrels. We questioned them about the censorship and the taking away of parents' rights. I am a parent of 3 adult children now. I use that term loosely. They don't pay all their bills. I do not co-parent with the government. I am the government. Like I said, Irish diplomacy. So we effectively found out about this the day after the consortium meeting. We called them on the carpet with us. They called us idiots and scoundrels. They said they were cutting people off from the rest of the consortium. And so it basically just came down to, and this is in their board minutes too, if it's illegal in Idaho, if it's racism, abortion, gender identity, occult, non-traditional families, non-traditional ideas, suicide, any of those things, it is now propaganda. And that is in their policies, their acquisition policies, and those are on their website. And so how could you, in good conscience as a librarian, share a collection or a non-collection, because we haven't really lost anything by losing Kootenai County. They're not buying anything.
That was West Bonner Library District Director Megan Mize speaking during a panel on the importance of libraries at the Kenworthy on Friday night. Those who normally attend the Palouse Peace Coalition's weekly Friday peace vigil and others were in Friendship Square in Moscow Friday afternoon to mourn those lost in Gaza. Frank Rodriguez spoke to KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox about prospects for the end of the killing of Palestinians.
I don't trust Donald Trump to hold anything. But I understand that the Islamic resistance, Hamas, has said, we're going to take a gamble to trust Donald Trump to hold to what the agreement is, which basically is a permanent ceasefire, because we don't trust Netanyahu at all. So we'll see. I don't trust Trump. I think, but I think the killing has to stop.
That was Frank Rodriguez, one of the vigilers, Friday afternoon in Friendship Square. On Thursday evening, the Pullman League of Women Voters held a forum for the race for the one Whitman County Commission seat up for election this year. The candidates are Republican Chad Wetzel, who has held the seat since he was appointed in March to replace Michael Largent, and Cody Finch, who lists his preference as the Conservative Party. Wetzel and Finch were the top two finishers in the August 5th primary. Wetzel had 1,766 votes, and Finch had 643 votes. The primary eliminated Republican Tucker Center, who had 533 votes. One question many rural Whitman County voters are concerned about, especially near Colfax, are plans by developer Steelhead Americas to build a 45-turbine wind farm near Kamiak Butte. Earlier this year, county commissioners placed a moratorium on conditional use permits for wind farms, but Steelhead Americas has indicated it is considering bypassing the county's conditional use permit process and getting approval by the Washington Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council to build the wind turbines. Here's candidate Chad Wetzel, followed by Cody Finch.
I was on the Planning Commission. I was chair of the Planning Commission for several years. So I have some knowledge of what's going on. The interesting thing with the Planning Commission is, right now, no matter what anybody tells you, nobody knows what the Planning Commission is going to put out. They're still working on that. So right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern waiting. My personal belief on wind farms is, I don't think they're efficient. I don't think they're sustainable. And I think the only way that they work is with large subsidies from the government. Those subsidies are being drawn back, and so we'll see how that all works out. I am very much in favor of personal property rights. If somebody wants to do something on their land that's not hurting their neighbors and doesn't cause other issues, go ahead and do it. If the government is subsidizing it, I believe that the people get some say in what's going on there. I think that the big problem with the current windmill is, as Cody stated earlier, there was some lack of forward thinking. The code wasn't updated when it should have been. It could have been done a long time ago, but there was resistance to do that at the time. So right now, we're waiting to see what the Planning Commission comes up with. And once they have that down, probably the end of the year-ish, then we can move forward with other ideas on how that's going to work.
Cody Finch.
My feelings on wind farms are, and we're talking about one in particular, is that this is not the right project for this county. And I don't like them visually, and I don't like the price tag, the true price tag that comes with them. But I think is where I'll differ from Chad a little bit. I think as a county commissioner that they're The Planning Commission is just offering their opinion, and it is up to the commissioners to ultimately dictate what they'll put into ordinance. And I think the Planning Commissioner, or I think the Planning Commission, should be given a better directive as to what the county would like out of this project. What we're so far behind on our zoning and our setbacks that we need to go forward and say, you know, as a county, we don't want this wind farm in this location. And these are the reasons why. You know, the proximity to so many houses, the proximity to Kamiak Butte, which is, you know, cherished by so many people. And I think we should protect those natural landmarks. And I think we should come up with zoning that isn't specific to wind, but, you know, how are we going to proceed ahead, and what are our setbacks going to be? I think it'd be some multiple of height from the property line. Right now, what you do on your property can affect what your neighbor does on theirs in the county. And we always have the option to change things. We always have the option to grant variances. And we can hear those things on an individual basis.
That was Whitman County Commission candidate Cody Finch, preceded by incumbent Chad Wetzel, speaking at a Pullman League of Women Voters Candidates Forum Thursday. Moderator Deb Olson then asked Wetzel and Finch a question from the audience about the possibility of a recreation trail on the rail bed between Colfax and Pullman. Here's Olson, followed by Chad Wetzel, and then Cody Finch.
Why don't we rail bank the Colfax-Albion-Pullman rail corridor and to utilize this valuable asset?
Chad Wetzel.
So part of this goes back to my earlier statements about eminent domain. Part of the problem with the Pullman-Albion-Colfax trail is there is a whole ton of disputes on who actually owns the land. And I am not in favor of wasting taxpayer dollars on lawsuits for trails. I think trails are important. I think they can be done. I believe that there have been trails that have been passed over in the recent past that I think were could have been utilized. My understanding now is, and we'll have to actually see what the state does now with their budget problems the way they are. The state is trying to include trails along highway right-of-ways. Now, there does present some interesting problems with that. I'm hoping that their idea is to create a good setback from people that are walking and high-speed traffic. But those are some possibilities, and I think that they may be very good. My understanding, one in particular that I know of, was between Uniontown and Colton. Granted, it doesn't tie into the rest of the trail system, but it probably would have been a good thing for that community. The access for the Pullman-Albion-Colfax Trail is also really great. It goes through some really remote areas with limited access for EMS if there's issues, and there's a ton of bridges to rebuild out there.
Cody Finch.
Yeah, I think what the county did collaboratively with, like, the Chipman Trail, for instance, I think that was a really great thing for the community. Now, with that, there's some upkeep and maintenance issues, and are one of our most shining examples of noxious weeds. But the more that we can get into recreation for the county, give our residents more to do, more spaces to utilize, I think that would be great. There are some carve-outs in the budget for recreation, that are a fee off of this or that, and some of that money would be available, but it's probably not to the scale that would be needed to do, the big bridge repairs and repaving of the trail. But I think looking at that, and if there was the right outpouring of support for a section to tie, Pullman to Albion or, to Colfax, that would be a great thing for the county.
That was Whitman County Commission candidate Cody Finch, preceded by incumbent Chad Wetzel, speaking at a Pullman League of Women Voters Candidates Forum Thursday. The entire forum is available on YouTube or in audio form on the KRFP website. Look for the Friday evening edition of the Evening Report. The winner in the November 4th general election will join Art Swanick and Tom Handy, both Republicans, on the Board of County Commissioners for 1 year to finish the term of Michael Largent, who resigned from the commission earlier this year.
On lawsuits for trails. I think trails are important. I think they can be done. I believe that there have been trails that have been passed over in the recent past that I think were could have been utilized. My understanding now is, and we'll have to actually see what the state does now with their budget problems the way they are. The state is trying to include trails along highway right-of-ways. Now, there does present some interesting problems with that. I'm hoping that their idea is to create a good setback from people that are walking in high-speed traffic. But those are some possibilities, and I think that they may be very good. My understanding, one in particular that I know of, was between Uniontown and Colton. Granted, it doesn't tie into the rest of the trail system, but it probably would have been a good thing for that community. The access for the Pullman Albion Colfax Trail is also really great. It goes through some really remote areas with limited access for EMS if there's issues, and there's a ton of bridges to rebuild out there.
Cody Finch.
Yeah, I think what the county did collaboratively with, like, the Chipman Trail, for instance, I think that was a really great thing for the community. Now, with that, there's some upkeep and maintenance issues, and are one of our most shining examples of noxious weeds. But the more that we can get into recreation for the county, give our residents more to do, more spaces to utilize, I think that would be great. There are some carve-outs in the budget for recreation, that are a fee off of this or that, and some of that money would be available, but it's probably not to the scale that would be needed to do, the big bridge repairs and repaving of the trail. But I think looking at that, and if there was the right outpouring of support for a section to tie, Pullman to Albion or, to Colfax, that would be a great thing for the county.
That was Whitman County Commission candidate Cody Finch, preceded by incumbent Chad Wetzel, speaking at a Pullman League of Women Voters Candidates Forum Thursday. The entire forum is available on YouTube or in audio form on the KRFP website. Look for the Friday evening edition of the Evening Report. The winner in the November 4th general election will join Art Swanick and Tom Handy, both Republicans, on the Board of County Commissioners for 1 year to finish the term of Michael Largent, who resigned from the commission earlier this year.
Portland City Council is updating policies for the critical energy infrastructure hub, and experts say without stronger regulation, an earthquake or fire at the site could have devastating statewide impacts. The CEI hub is a 6-mile stretch of fuel tanks along the Willamette River in northwest Portland that store 90% of Oregon's liquid fuel. Breach Collective attorney Nick Caleb says the hub was built 100 years ago on top of wetlands with fill soil, meaning the land beneath would likely liquefy in the event of a large earthquake.
We're overdue for the big one, as they say, in the Pacific Northwest. And so all that infrastructure is very vulnerable. And if we do have a large seismic event, then we're going to have one of the worst disasters in U.S. history right in the middle of Portland, Oregon.
Portland City Council is reviewing 4 proposals to update the CEI hub regulations, only one of which would reduce the amount of fuel stored on site. Caleb says industry lobbyists are advocating for weaker rules, and the public can comment on the proposals until October 17th. Scientific models predict a large earthquake is likely within the next few decades, and Portland is especially vulnerable to its effects. Research by Portland State University found that if the pressurized containers at the hub are broken, the resulting chemical spill could kill more than 2,500 people and injure more than 17,000. Caleb adds, in the event of such a disaster, the whole region would be impacted.
If all liquid fuel storage in the state is ignited and spills into the Willamette, people just won't have fuel, and that will pose other human health and economic problems throughout the state.
Caleb adds that while slowly reducing the hub's fuel reserves would be a step in the right direction, it isn't enough.
These are technologies of the past that we just need to be aggressively moving away from. We have alternatives that are safer, that are better, that allow for more autonomy and independence.
For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear tonight, low 30, widespread frost mainly after 2 a.m., widespread frost before 9 a.m. tomorrow, otherwise sunny, high 56, partly cloudy Tuesday night, areas of frost after midnight, low 32, sunny, high 55 on Wednesday, mostly clear, low 31 Wednesday night, widespread frost mainly after 2 a.m., and sunny, high 57 on Thursday. Widespread frost, mainly before 8 a.m. Currently, we have 45 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and art programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Membership's $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast, including recording the librarians' panel discussion. Have a good night. Coming up, we have Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, special Indigenous People's Day edition. And at 7:30, we got music, so stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP Moscow is the best in the USA. Yeah.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.